Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. Instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jack Gillis. Mr. Gillis, you may now begin.
Today is releasing its annual consumer complaint report detailing the nation's top consumer complaints in 2020. I'm joined by Susan Grant, CFA's Director of Consumer Protection and Privacy, Rafael Carbajar, Director of Los Angeles County's Department of Consumer and Business Affairs in California, and Chuck Harder, Deputy Attorney General of the Arkansas Attorney General's Office. Also available on the call to answer questions are 10 consumer agencies from around the country. They are listed in our press advisory. However, let me quickly identify them for you. Broward County Environmental and Consumer Protection Division in Florida, Pinellas County Consumer Protection in Florida, the Hillsborough County Department of Consumer and Veterans Services in Florida, the New York City Department of Consumer and Worker Protection in New York, the Maryland Attorney General's Office, the Montgomery County Office of Consumer Protection in Maryland, the Consumer Assistance Council in Massachusetts, the Monmouth County Division of Consumer Affairs in New Jersey, the Cuyahoga County Department of Consumer Affairs in Ohio, and the South Carolina Department of Consumer Affairs. Today, we'll only be taking calls from the media. The press release, report, and related graphics are available on the Consumer Federation's website. That's consumerfed.org, consumerfed.org, under Newsroom. For others with questions, you are welcome to contact the Consumer Federation of America. Now I'd like to turn the floor over to Susan Grant, CFA's Director of Consumer Protection and Privacy. Susan?
Thank you, Jack, and thank you all for joining us today as we release our annual survey about complaints to state and local consumer agencies. These agencies deal with a wide range of consumer problems and try to resolve them informally through mediation. Some agencies also have the ability to take formal action to stop bad practices in the marketplace and get restitution for consumers. 34 consumer agencies from 18 states participated in this year's survey, which asked them about the most common complaints they received last year, the worst, fastest growing, and new complaints, new consumer protection laws enacted in their jurisdictions, and their biggest achievements. This time, we also asked for information about complaints related to the COVID-19 pandemic. The impact of the pandemic is clear in every section of the report. Business closings, job layoffs, supply chain disruptions, social distancing requirements, and travel restrictions put huge strains on consumers and businesses, generating complaints about everything from appliance repairs to child care, trash pickup to towing. State and local consumer agencies also dealt with a deluge of complaints last year about price gouging and COVID-related scams. Pandemic complaints were among the top 10 complaints reported to state and local consumer agencies last year, but their actual ranking is probably higher because not all agencies created a separate category for them. Pandemic-related complaints are likely included in many other categories that agencies use, such as credit, entertainment, fraud, health clubs, internet sales, landlord-tenant, retail, services, travel, and utilities. Here are the top 10 complaints based on those most frequently cited in agencies' top 10 lists. At number one, and as usual, this is number one, is auto. And this includes misrepresentations in advertising or sales of new and used cars, deceptive financing practices, defective vehicles, faulty repairs, car leasing and rentals, and towing disputes. At number two, often also its traditional spot, is home improvement and construction, such as shoddy work, failure to start or complete the job, and failure to have the required licensing or registration. At number three is landlord-tenant. Unhealthy or unsafe conditions, failure to make repairs or provide promised amenities, deposit and rent disputes, and illegal eviction tactics. Number four is credit and debt. These are billing and fee disputes, mortgage problems, credit repair and debt relief services, predatory lending, and illegal or abusive debt collection tactics. At number five is services. Misrepresentations, shoddy work, failure to have required licensing or registration, and non-performance. Number six is utilities, complaints about gas, electric, water, and cable billing and service. At number seven is retail sales, false advertising and other deceptive practices, defective merchandise, problems with rebates, coupons, gift cards, and gift certificates, and failure to deliver. At number eight is travel. These are misrepresentations about cost, amenities, or other aspects of travel packages, failure to provide promised services, and disputes about refunds. Number nine was a tie between health products and services, which are misleading claims, unlicensed practitioners, failure to deliver and billing issues, and internet sales, misrepresentations or other deceptive practices, and failure to deliver online purchases. And finally, at number 10 is a three-way tie between pandemic complaints, fraud, and household goods. Pandemic complaints include price gouging, refunds for canceled events and travel, financial issues, problems getting repairs and other services, self-help evictions, scams, and other complaints stemming from the pandemic. Fraud encompasses bogus sweepstakes and lotteries, work-at-home schemes, grant offers, fake check scams, imposter scams, and other common frauds. And household goods includes misrepresentations, failure to deliver, and repair issues in connection with furniture and major appliances. Pandemic-related complaints also top the list of the worst, fastest-growing, and new complaints last year. Many of the new consumer protection laws enacted in agencies' jurisdictions last year were prompted by the pandemic. For example, the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors passed an ordinance enforced by the Los Angeles County Department of Consumer and Business Affairs to protect workers who report possible public health violations at their workplace from retaliation. Another example is Maryland, which enacted a price gouging law for the first time, and Massachusetts expanded its existing price gouging law to cover all essential goods and services, not just petroleum products. We created a section in this year's survey report with examples of pandemic-related complaints. One thing that's clear from many of these complaints is that the usual terms of service and cancellation policies don't take into account the unusual circumstances in which consumers found themselves last year. It wasn't their fault, for instance, when a couple had to cancel the big wedding they planned, or the fancy dress a mother put on layaway for her daughter was no longer needed because the prom was canceled. And these consumers understandably felt that they should get their money back, even though the terms did not allow for refunds. Often, consumer agencies were able to persuade the businesses to make exceptions from their regular cancellation and refund policies under the circumstances, but not always. They generally had a stronger basis to argue that consumers should be able to cancel with no penalty and get their money back when the pandemic prevented businesses such as party venues and sports promoters from actually being able to provide the promised services. But even then, consumer agencies sometimes found it difficult to resolve the problems. For example, some child care providers said that even though they were temporarily forced to close, parents should continue to pay their fees in order to save their children's slots for when the facilities reopened. We provide tips for consumers about navigating the COVID-19 pandemic and other disasters in the survey report and on our website under consumer information. COVID-19 also significantly changed the way state and local consumer agencies operated. Most had to switch to working entirely remotely. Others sent small numbers of personnel into their offices on a rotating basis to handle the phones and mail. Their staff sometimes fielded calls about problems totally unrelated to consumer protection because people were unable to get through to other state and local agencies. Forced to rely on technology more heavily than ever, agencies encouraged consumers to communicate with them via email and used online platforms for administrative hearings and educational events that would normally be conducted in person. All these changes had to be made very quickly, but state and local consumer agencies continued to provide vital information and assistance to the public without missing a beat. The consumer agency's biggest achievements section of the report describes how agencies resolved consumer problems, improved their operations, and reached out to the public even as the pandemic raged. As one agency put it to me, our biggest achievement last year was to keep on doing our job. We have two speakers from consumer agencies today. We'll hold all questions until the end of this press conference. The first speaker will be Rafael Carbajal, Director of the Los Angeles County Department of Consumer and Business Affairs, who will describe the pandemic-related complaints his agency received last year, how it helped consumers, and the impact COVID-19 had on its operations. Rafael, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you very much. And thank you to the Consumer Federation of America for inviting me to participate in today's call. Again, thank you. Rafael Carbajal, Director of the Los Angeles County Department of Consumer and Business Affairs, based here in Los Angeles, California. LA County is home to more than 10 million residents, and it is the largest county in America by population. The Department of Consumer and Business Affairs has served LA County consumers and communities since 1976. We are the only county-based standalone consumer protection agency in the state of California. 2020 was an extraordinary challenging year for all consumer protection agencies, and ours was certainly no different. Our plans for the year took a turn as COVID arrived in our county and a local emergency was declared. As in any declared emergency, one of our department's primary roles is to monitor and accept complaints of potential price gouging. According to the price gouging ordinances in both the state of California and LA, businesses may not increase the prices of goods or services more than 10% during a declared emergency. We immediately received many complaints related to COVID emergency as the prices of items like gloves, hand sanitizers, bottled water, and paper products skyrocketed, and for us, no case was too small. Also, early in the emergency, with so much fear and uncertainty, consumers were even more susceptible to fraud. One unique scam we successfully investigated involved a company which was selling a coronavirus cure online. So what was that magic cure? It was a paste made from radishes, and many people paid for this radish paste. We worked with our partners at the LA City Attorney's Office to win $20,000 worth of restitution for duped consumers, and we shut down the business successfully. Radish paste was not alone. Fortunately for the residents of LA County, the Board of Supervisors recognized the critical role that consumer protection agencies like those on this call play and continue to play during this pandemic, and provided us additional tools to protect our consumers. In March, the board authorized a motion delegating subpoena powers to our department to enhance our ability to investigate and enforce price gouging protections in LA County. In April, we introduced a new Stop Price Gouging mobile application to help consumers easily report suspected cases of illegal price increases. Consumers could file on-the-spot accurate complaints that could be supported with photos of receipts, advertisements, products, and other evidence of wrongful doing, all while geocoding this information and timestamping it for accurate record keeping and investigation. These tools have been instrumental in allowing our department to more effectively protect our consumers. In 2020, DCVA received more than 3,300 consumer complaints. Our work resulted in more than $10 million recovered for consumers. The pandemic has brought so many challenges to our consumers, but one of the biggest problems has been that thousands of LA County residents have found themselves on the brink of losing their homes. Our department already oversaw LA County's housing and tenant protection programs and is a central counseling center for questions involving landlord-tenant issues. The economic downturn as a result of the pandemic impacted no group of people more than renters, and we needed to desperately help them stay housed. So in September 2020, we launched our Stay Housed LA program, a partnership between community organizations, legal services providers, and DCBA. Stay Housed LA provided our renters with information about their rights as tenants, and it provides legal assistance to help prevent evictions and keep people in their homes. Through Stay Housed LA, we connected with over 211,000 tenants, conducted over 262 Know Your Rights educational events attended by over 4,300 renters, and provided over 10,000 tenant households with legal services. In March, the Board of Supervisors took quick action to keep LA County's renters in their homes by instituting a temporary eviction moratorium, which placed a countywide ban on evictions for residential and commercial tenants, and the moratorium is still in place. But new laws and consumer protections can only go so far. To support these efforts, agencies needed to deliver excellent customer service. With so many people in need and with so much person-to-person interaction missing from our daily lives, we knew that when someone called out for help, we needed to be there to answer their call and give them direct counseling and assistance that fit their unique situation. Our department, along with our several partner agencies in LA County, launched the LA County Disaster Help Center to help business owners, nonprofits, workers, homeowners, landlords, and tenants navigate the impacts of an unprecedented pandemic. The Help Center operated daily since its launch on March 26, with live agents who answered COVID-19-related calls from LA County residents in the areas of emergency aid, funding sources, reopening protocols, navigating the eviction moratorium, and helping connect with rental assistance. In total, the Help Center agents have managed more than 36,500 calls to address the needs of LA County's diverse population. These were person-to-person engagements during some of the most challenging times folks have faced, and they were able to connect with a real-life human being to provide them the information that they needed. Unique challenges have called for unique solutions, and we are proud of the work we have done to provide even a little bit of improvement for the lives of our 10 million consumers in LA County. We salute all of our fellow consumer agencies across the nation who are committed to protecting vulnerable consumers when they need it most, and who are putting in the work and developing new methods to help keep people's finances, jobs, and homes more safe and secure. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Raphael. Of course, consumers didn't only make pandemic-related complaints last year. State and local consumer agencies continue to receive complaints about many other problems. There are examples of these in the real-world complaints and greatest achievements section of the report. One interesting issue that the Arkansas Attorney General's Office highlighted was the increasing availability of third-party financing for purchases such as appliances and furniture at retail stores. While this financing may be helpful for some consumers, there are problems when the terms aren't made adequately clear. Here to speak about that is Arkansas Deputy Attorney General Chuck Harder. Chuck, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Susan and Jack, for the opportunity to participate today in this very important discussion. Arkansas demographics play an important role in the types of complaints we receive, and those demographics are we're a rural state. Our Arkansans need automobiles to get to work, to take their children to school, and to buy groceries. Arkansas ranks 34th in population density, but we rank 11th in cars per capita. Many Arkansans find it difficult to make ends meet, and they don't really understand complicated financing arrangements and transactions. Arkansas ranks in the bottom 10 states with regard to disposable income, average credit scores, and education level. So what are the implications? Most of the complaints we receive from consumers are about major purchases, automobiles, consumer goods and services, home construction, repair, and maintenance. But underlying most of those complaints are the financing of those major purchases. Arkansans, many Arkansans are unable to find traditional and affordable sources of financing, and they have to rely on other sources. Arkansas also has a usury law that limits interest rates on customer loans to 17%. And what you find are a lot of companies that attempt to circumvent that usury limit through various schemes, including rent-to-own schemes and rent-a-bank schemes. So how do we get involved? Our duty is to enforce the consumer protection laws of Arkansas. That's our statutory charge. In some instances, we find that vendors do violate the law, and we do prosecute them when we find that. We find in some instances they fail to provide the required disclosures. They engage in behavior that's intended to deceive or mislead consumers. Most of the time, however, there are no clear violations, and we're left with trying to mediate a complaint between a business and the consumer to try and find a compromise that's acceptable to both. A trend that we're seeing right now, it's a disturbing trend, is a significant increase in consumer complaints for financing that are advertised as no credit needed, 90 days same as cash, no interest financing, and the main culprits are rent-to-own schemes and rent-a-bank schemes. And I'm going to go through a couple of examples. The first I want to go through is the rent-to-own scheme. We have a situation where a pastor and his wife went looking for a living room suite. They needed to get a new living room furniture. They went to a local furniture store where they thought they could find affordable furniture. They filled out a credit application and were approved for credit up to $1,600. And so they began shopping around the furniture store for a living room suit in that price range. They found it. They worked with the salesman. They were excited. They worked with the salesman, and they hurriedly signed the paperwork provided by the salesman. Well, when they got home and they sat down and they started to go over the paperwork, they learned that they had signed up for a rent-to-own plan. It was not a credit sale, a financing arrangement, or a loan. The so-called lender was a third party and not even the furniture store. They found out that the 90-day same-as-cash option that the salesman had described in his sales pitch was really an early purchase option that required the payment of the cash price plus 15%. If the consumers were to make all of the payments on the living room suit, they will have paid almost $6,000 on something that costs $1,600. The problem for us in this particular situation is the paperwork complied with Arkansas law. There's not a whole lot that we can do to help this consumer. It gets down to a problem of he said, she said. You know, the consumers say that they were told this was 90 days, same as cash in the credit arrangement, but the leasing company won't take responsibility for any of the representations made by the salesperson at the furniture store. And the salesman says he just followed what he was told to say by the leasing company. So it's not a good situation for the consumer, and one that's really difficult for us to be able to intervene and get a good resolution. The second example of what we've encountered actually is an example that people will finance almost anything. We have, and it's an example of the no credit situation. A college student found a puppy. College student wanted to buy the puppy. Puppy cost $3,500. The financing was done through an FDIC insured state chartered bank from a state outside the state of Arkansas. It was a rent-a-bank so that the interest rate from that state could be imported and used for the purchase in Arkansas. The loan called for weekly payments of $107. The student wanted the dog. The $107 didn't sound like too much, so she signed the paperwork and left with the dog. It was only when her parents found out about the dog and what had gone on that they discovered that she had committed herself to 104 weekly payments of $107, which ultimately means the dog would cost $11,190. And the interest rate was a whopping 153%. Again, the problem is that the lending institution complied with all the mandatory disclosures relative to the financing. All the paperwork was in order. There really wasn't anything for us to do. It was a he said, she said situation where we weren't able to help the consumer. So in these instances, we've taken a proactive approach and tried through our consumer outreach to identify those situations that Arkansans are likely to find themselves in and to issue tip sheets. In this particular situation, we want to let consumers know they need to read and understand the contract before signing it. The retailers and the lenders are required to describe and clearly explain all the costs and details of these. Don't simply rely on the salesman's assurances as they run you through an electronic document. Take your time, try to understand everything, because you can make a commitment where something you thought was $3,500 is going to end up being $11,000. Know what the terms are. How often do you pay and how much? What are the additional fees and what triggers those fees? In the early payoff situation, there was a 15% fee associated with that the pastor and his wife didn't realize they were getting into when they bought the furniture. Beware of no interest financing. The rate of interest may be embedded in the cost of the rents that are paid. And consider saving up for the items that you need. And through this and other consumer outreach, we hope to head off these situations so that we don't find ourselves and consumers don't find themselves in situations where they really have no recourse but to live with the arrangements that they have or default on those and have their stuff taken away. And with that, Susan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Chuck. And you made a point that I just want to reiterate, and that is something that's come up in previous surveys that we've done, the increasing use of electronic devices to contain the contract. So the salesperson might be using a handheld device or a laptop, and the consumer would have to scroll through multiple pages in order to fully read and comprehend what the agreement is, something that I think people are unlikely to do, or at least do carefully. And all too often, they just rely on what the salesperson tells them, which, as Chuck well knows, is sometimes not the real deal. So there is a link to the full survey report in our press release, and it's on our website under the issue area, Consumer Protection, Consumer Complaints. There you'll also find the tips for navigating COVID-19 and other disasters. That's also in the consumer information section of our website. And we also have graphics in both places that we created for the navigating COVID-19 and other disaster tips and for the top 10 complaints. Please feel free to use and link to all of the survey materials. So we're happy to take your questions now. Operator, please open the reporter's line.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our first question comes from Greg Iacurci from CNBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for doing the call this afternoon. I was just wondering, is there any way to quantify, fraud or consumer complaints related to the pandemic among survey respondents? The Federal Trade Commission releases data, but I expect that the state agencies would have more comprehensive information because the FTC data is only self-reported.
Thank you for that question, and it's an important point. Both at the FTC and at state and local consumer agencies, those complaints are self-reported. We didn't conduct a random survey of consumers, and the state and local consumer agencies don't normally do that either. So we know that the complaints that they receive and that federal agencies receive are only the tip of the iceberg. I don't have information to provide you about how many consumers in the U.S. have been approached for scams related to the pandemic, but I think it's safe to say that it's an awful lot of people. Scammers always take advantage of disasters, man-made or natural, to offer help to consumers, to claim that they're from the government and need people's information in order to provide them with certain benefits, to sell them things that are going to, if it's a disease situation like this, that are going to cure them or prevent them from becoming ill. So that has been a major problem in the last year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And as a reminder to our audience, you may ask a question by pressing star one now. And it appears that we have no additional questions at this time.
Okay. Well, I hope that's because our press release and the information that we've provided in this press conference has been so thorough. In the report, you will find numerous examples of not only pandemic-related complaints, but other kinds of complaints. At the back of the report in Appendix A is the list of all of the agencies that contributed to the survey this year. If reporters would like to contact one of those agencies or have any other questions, they should reach out to me, Susan Grant, sgrant@consumerfed.org, or 202-939-1003, and I will be happy to put you in touch with somebody at an agency and otherwise help you get the answers to your questions. Let's just pause to ask if anybody's thought of a question that they would like to ask before we close.
And we did have one more come through. This is from James Fleming with Tire Kicking Today. Please go ahead.
Yes, regarding the automotive complaints, are you finding any difference between complaints against traditional car dealers as opposed to the online buying services like CarMax, Carvana, Vroom? And also the differences between new cars and used cars. Thank you.
Well, I'll start with that, and then if anybody from an agency has anything to add, I invite you to do so. We didn't get any complaints, examples of complaints this time specifically about Carfax, Carvana, or other non-traditional car sellers. But there's at least one example of a situation where, and I think it's from New Jersey, where consumers are buying cars online from somebody who specializes in classic cars. And because they're buying them sight unseen and not even having anybody look at them before they are delivered, it's not until the car is offloaded into their driveway that they find out that either it doesn't run at all or it doesn't run properly, that there are the wrong parts in the car. I mean, you know, these are really terrible problems because the consumer is stuck with the car with no economical way to return it to the seller, even if the seller was willing to take it back. They may not have very much in the way of protection in their state law. Many states allow cars to be sold as is. Even when states have some sort of used car sales laws that protect consumers, the practical reality is that if the seller is in another state, it's hard for the consumer agency as well as the consumer to do anything about it. If the seller just wants to ignore you, taking legal action could be very difficult. So we really recommend that, especially for used cars, that consumers don't buy them without actually seeing them, test driving them, and maybe even taking it to a mechanic. And if it's in another state, try to arrange for a mechanic there to have a look at it. And the other point that I just want to make, since you raised Carfax, is we have had examples in previous surveys of people relying on Carfax reports and then finding out that there's a problem with a used car that didn't show up in the report. So we always advise consumers that while that can be helpful, it's not a substitute for taking the car to a mechanic that you trust and having it evaluated before you decide whether or not to buy that used car. Anybody else want to add to that?
Susan, this is Chuck. I mentioned in my remarks about the importance of having an automobile in Arkansas. We're not seeing a significant uptick with the online purchases, but we do have a lot of complaints. The complaints we get around used cars, the ones that are real difficult are the ones where they drive it off the lot and it just breaks down, or they find out they've bought something that doesn't run after a week or so. Those are really difficult. Where we've had some success and where we do see problems are in a lot of buy here, pay here used car dealerships. Some of the problems we've been able to address are failure to deliver title. In a lot of instances, the title's not delivered to the consumer at the time of sale or within a reasonable time after that, and consumers are scared they're going to get pulled over and not be able to show they have the paperwork demonstrating they own the car. So we've been able to help consumers there. Another is on the financing piece of it. And what we find are a lot of financing arrangements where what appears to be an affordable arrangement of $75 a week with a balloon payment around tax time in March, the consumers end up defaulting because by the time tax time gets around, they've figured out eight different ways to spend their tax refund and they don't have the money to pay the balloon. In some situations, we've been able to prove that those are not, in fact, car dealerships. They're actually, they just generate financing arrangements. You find the same car has been sold three or four times and there's paperwork, financial paperwork on the same vehicle. And we've been able to address those situations as well. But, that's what we see a lot with respect to the cars, and it's a bigger problem with the buy here, pay here used car dealers than it is with more traditional dealerships.
Thanks, Chuck. And I know that other agencies on the state and local level get the same kind of complaints. Are there any other questions?
And we have no additional questions at this time.
Okay. Well, again, you can reach me at sgrant@consumerfed.org or 202-939-1003. Thank you very much for joining us today and helping us get the word out to consumers about the problems that they may encounter in the marketplace, what they can do to try to avoid or solve those problems, and the availability of state and local consumer protection agencies to help them. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.